Okay, here we are at the Made Bike Show, and I'm standing here with the Machina guys. And why don't you introduce yourselves?
I'm Sean.
I'm Tom.
Sean and Tom, they're both mechanical engineers?
Yeah.
Nope. Well.
What are you, Tom?
I'm a boat builder and then a machinist, fitter, turner, millwright.
Okay, so you're the hands-on.
I've got multiple qualifications.
Okay, cool. And you're both from Canada?
Originally from the UK, but we both live in Whistler.
Yeah, I'm from Australia, Sydney.
Uh-huh. So, and you're both making these bikes in Whistler, but maybe you're having parts sent to you type of thing, like that you're at. It's pure Whistler manufacturing.
Everything's made by us, except for the 3D printed parts, which are brought in. I mean, we don't have a 3D printer that does titanium, so the rest of it, we do everything ourselves. Tom's machined everything.
And that's super impressive, because your bike, it really stands out from a lot of others, obviously, because you've got a lot of the big machine-y parts, and they look dope and everything like that, but then you have these lovely carbon fiber sections, too, that are gorgeous and really nicely shaped, and the fact that you two guys, just alone, you don't have any other crew?
Nope.
Just us.
Two guys alone are producing a bike
after
your day job on this gorgeous bike, and you're doing a pinion with a single sprocket in the rear and some, you know, no high idler or anything like that.
Flip chip.
Adjustable.
Brake.
Oh, yeah, you got to have that these days. You know, all the kids are talking about it.
It's marginal.
Right. Yeah, I'm sure you've actually measured and you're like, yeah, whatever.
We're after every tenth of a second. We need it.
And so, you know, you guys are looking at this as very informed, technical level constructors and engineers, and you're living in Whistler. You came from Australia. I'm sure you got there because you wanted to shred, you know. So you're riding in some real shit, and like, what are you thinking at the outset of this project as a goal?
I mean, we went into it trying to create a good race bike for the race, like, level that we both participate at, which is, like, amateur level. But we wanted to try out a few concepts, as well as plotting out the exact geometry that both of us are very close to. And we've proved a lot of it out. It's a really good bike. The kinematics works really well because of the sprung versus unsprung weight ratio benefit that you get from moving the weight of the cassette onto the sprung section of the bike.
Well, and also extremely consistent positions of the torsion, the tension force in the rear system.
Yeah.
Your anti-squat and your anti-rise stays the same. It doesn't change depending on the gear.
Right.
So if you design a bike around like a 32 sprocket, and then on the rear you run a 48, and that's how you've designed it. But if you're riding when it's a 28 in the front, and you, depending on your anti-rise and anti-squat, will change because of the ratio change. Like, it changes all the kinematics. We're having a one-to-one system. Your kinematics won't change.
Mm-hmm.
So that is that advantage. And then the biggest advantage is the weight, like, hands down.
Sure, I bet, because, you know, I run... I have to save money where I can, and I run the GX level cassettes in the back.
The majority of the people do.
Yeah, but the thing is, you can really notice how much weight that adds to the rear end, and I'm sure yours is a lot lighter. Now you've got an FSR configuration here.
Yep. 4-bar. It's simple. It's easy. Like, we didn't want to chase this, like, oh, we could get, you know, 45,000 pivot linkage thing. I think the 4-bar you can work with, you can get a really good curve and kinematics without going into the ultra complex. And the whole ethos is just, like, keep it simple. Like, yeah, we could have done a single pivot with one pivot, and that's simple, but it's keep it simple, but have the performance and have the reliability. Where with a 4-bar, you can get it pretty reliable.
Well, I think even if you went really, really simple with kinematics, you guys are biting off a big bite with this bike. You've got 3D printing,
yeah,
CNC machining, carbon fiber layup. You've got all that stuff. It's a huge undertaking.
Absolutely.
And
I
don't think anybody here can look at this and imagine that just two guys made it on their off hours and still managed to have a life. Sure.
A lot of beer.
a lot of beer. But you know, it's gorgeous work, and like your work with the carbon and the way it connects to, say, the machined parts or the printed parts, and you're working in almost all the materials. I'm sure when we get into pivots and stuff like that, you're machining steel or turning steel parts too. Like, you've got so many materials and processes in here. It's really sick.
And it's really modular and intentional in the design as well. Like, cost was a huge factor for a lot of the decisions we made. We did do it on a budget. We have one front triangle tool that is both the connections at the spigots are parallel. So within reason, we can play with reach. We can reuse that front end by peeling back that single lap. It's relatively easy and quick. We've done it multiple times. We've got adjustable jigs that we can cut the front end of the front triangle, bond a new one on, and you've got like 450 to 490 reach adjustment. Wouldn't be what we'd do in production, but you could get away with it for this prototype. And we both landed on a geometry. You lock that in the manufacturing process on the front end, and then you've got the flip chip at the back just to work on a little bit of balance at the back end. And we found that we both kind of landed on really quite similar geometry finally, which we're both really happy with. Like, it's a hell of a race machine, and where we live, it's really specifically designed for pretty rough and rowdy tracks with steep descents into steep climbs. Dump the gears, like Tom said, you're not changing the ratio back there. It's 1-to-1.
Yeah.
It's just really linear performance, like, throughout. Really reliable, really familiar.
What type of carbon are you laying up here? Like, you're working with a prepreg type environment?
Yeah, full prepreg.
And what kind of carbon? What kind of epoxy?
It's just, we just went with like an easy composites carbon out of the UK because it's cheap. I didn't have to spend $10,000 on a roll of carbon. Yeah. We could get 5 meters. Yeah, yeah. That was the main reason about that choice. And it's nice stuff to work with. So you've got a bunch of unidirectional, a bunch of twills and stuff. Nothing like, no crazy, like, we're using high modulus this and that. It's for our level, like, we could engineer that and get to that if we wanted to, but
sure.
It's a couple guys after work and
sure. The marginal gains that you get in how you're laying up a carbon tube don't even stack up compared to the macro gains that you can get by changing layout or geometry and things like that.
Yeah, totally.
It's like, chase that shit later. It's like, it's fine. Like, get real gains first,
yeah,
then chase marginal gains.
Exactly.
You know?
It's like, we got the platforms there now, so if we wanted to, we could tune the front stiffness and get the harmonics right, but it's actually
rides
really good now, so yeah. It's like, why change something if it's not, you know, like...
Right. We're pretty close.
Yeah, we're pretty close.
Like you said, we were playing with... We took a big bite with the... We were pretty ambitious with a lot of it.
Yeah.
And
yeah, it's going to be nice to take a little time to ride the bike instead of doing those late nights in the shop, you know?
And the coming,
like, ride the thing.
Yeah. And that's been a huge part of it from the beginning, really, like, riding it and racing it and really testing it, breaking it, figuring all that out has been... We've learned so much. And
so what stage in evolution are you here? We've gotten through how many prototypes of a rolling functional bike so far?
So on my bike... seat tube, the whole, like, all the printed parts, all original, all the rear ends original except for the seat stay. We cracked the where it bonds because of the braking forces, and the only reason we went to billet is because we were a week out from the EWS, so we just machined it overnight and we had it for the other, like, we could just still develop and work on it and work over those things, but it's working really good now, and we simplified. We
is,
like,
is this your bike, or is
this is my personal
okay,
bike.
Okay, so this is the bike you're describing. Yeah.
Yeah, so then we had we originally had a sliding dropout with a brake mount that you wouldn't need to change the flip chips, it would slide into each position.
Sure.
But just to keep the complicity down and keep it simple, we just went to the IS mount, which is really great for, like, an adjustable chainstay.
Yeah.
You don't need fancy off-the-shelf adapters and brackets. It's you just get an IS mount.
Yeah.
Can change. And so this is the third iteration of front triangle on this bike. I've changed reach. One was a failure, which we all know about. And then, yeah, I've just changed reach and tweaked the layup a little bit. Not crazy. Like, we have changed our manufacturing method for the head tube issue that we had.
Right.
That was solely my fault as well, so.
Well, that's a real shame that happened, you know, because it's like, nobody wants that. Nobody wants to see that happen and everything like that. And, you know, I've been there. People that are trying should have been there.
Everyone's been there.
And it happened in front of a lot of people.
Yeah,
type
I got
of thing.
I got nothing to hide. It was
right.
It was my fault laying up. I stuffed up, and I'll own it.
I mean, you're talking to the guy that published all the articles about broken handlebars.
Yeah, yeah,
so
yeah.
It's like, I mean, you want to talk about evil thoughts, right? And but
a lot of some of that was. It was like we were caught up in the development as well, and we were like, literally the bike was out the tool. It was so fresh, no one in, like we shouldn't have really been even talking to, like, shouldn't really been talking to anyone. We were so stoked.
Yeah,
we
yeah.
were riding it. We were, like, we were
sometimes
going
there's runaway energy, and you just kind of like,
so we
like, move we, stuff.
We
yeah.
explained that. We said it's an untested, unridden prototype,
right.
Like, you know, and we probably should have put some stipulations in, but it's part of growing and learning. And
we did learn, and we upgraded, like, we've really stepped up our manufacturer of the front end now, like, the seat tube and the
yeah, essentially
the head tube
it's exactly
now.
The same, like,
as the Argonaut.
Argonaut's patented, but yep. I've been using it, and the company I've been using it has been using it for 30-plus years.
Yep.
So we applied that technology to this frame, like, some parts full trap silicon mandrel, and then we have silicon mandrels that expand, then have internal air bladders in them, and so we can really control the consolidation and the layup method in certain parts and certain aspects, and get the definition we want. Like a normal bag, you would never get a mil radius. It's not great for carbon. It's great for looks, but the only way you'd get that is with the mandrel method, the silicon mandrel method. So we've taken things and applied things to areas that we've had issues with and learned. It's just constant development, right?
Like, we really like relied on 3D additive for the development. Like we basically printed all our jigs and cut jigs and the accuracy that we got.
Are you talking plastic prints?
Yeah. Yeah.
The only metal prints was just what's on the bike, but everything else was printed in plastic.
Yeah, and then the only alloy billet tool we have is the spine of the frame jig, but the rest of it's like apply.
Yeah, where it matters, like where we bond the seat tube to the gearbox, it's a full billet tool just to keep the alignment in check, and that all slides together really nice, but everything else is 3D printed tooling.
And this is a trick a lot of people don't understand when they look at a bike like this, is how much effort it took to figure out tooling and engineer tooling and find cheaper ways of getting very expensive jobs done.
Yeah.
It's very cool.
At an accuracy that's like acceptable, and I think you can really appreciate that too. Like, for the cost, what you can achieve with a 3D printer.
Yeah, it is amazing on the tool side what you can do.
Yeah.
And, like when this is a cool point in development, like, say, you guys probably had the hardest, just, like, felt like you were climbing a mountain just to get the first running bike.
And we then did you. In 8 months, from let's make a bike to riding, it was 8 months of after hours, after doing our day job.
That's really insane looking at this kind of bike, you know. That's huge, huge work. Maybe long, cold winters might have helped.
Yeah. Right? And again, a lot of beer.
We did have, we set a stake in the ground targeting the EWS for what if we can make it.
And you were right there to the wire.
We were, man. Like Tom was on holiday, and I was catting the seat stay, texting him, like, photos and chatting. And then, like you said,
I got back on the Wednesday, Thursday night. I machined the parts. We were racing Friday.
That sounds like racing.
Yeah.
But the thing is, okay, once you got two rideable bikes for each of you, well, you've conquered that part of the mountain. But what's really fun in my mind at that point is now you can go, oh, let's further develop this part, or let's further develop that part. And now you can actually address, of course, all the problems you didn't figure on the first round, and you get to fix those but also refine the product. And that's when it starts getting more fun,
yeah,
so to speak. And it's like, say, since you got it up and running, what's one of the more fun developmental areas that you've worked on?
I think, I mean, we're waiting for a new gearbox lug. So that's the V1 printed stuff. We were super close, like out like for our first iteration, everything plugged in. Our tolerance guesses were all pretty close. Like, we hadn't really worked significantly with tie printing, so we were extremely close. We've like worked a little bit more on a V2 gearbox, and I love that part because it's a modeling challenge. It's good looking, in my opinion. There's internal routing, is latticed inside with like shelled at 1.25 mil with like reinforced areas. It's pretty technical, like cool, nerdy part. I think that's been the main one for us. Like, we were super close out, like, off the bat, honestly, and we're really happy with the performance. Now it's trying to just work on the reliability and, like, making sure that we can have this thing for a couple of years running with no issues at, like, almost at a race level or a bike park level is kind of the goal now. Would you say the same? We're really close
out of the park.
What have you had the most interest in further develop once you got rolling?
Just little things, like with the flip chips, I only made one size, just time.
Yeah.
So now we've got the flip chip and we can try the different positions for the rear center balance. And then now I was riding a 475 reach, which was good. But then I've just dialed it back a bit, just to get the balance a bit better for myself personally. And so just those little things, just incremental gains. Like,
yeah.
We'd like to do a V2 of the rear end.
I mean, personally, you've seen my stuff with geometry, yeah. And it's like, I've been playing with geometry for 20 fucking years. It's like, it never ends.
Yeah.
There's never, ever a change you don't want to make, but at the same time, you don't want to make a fully adjustable bike. You want to make a bike that has adjustments that are needed and meaningful in a setup, but not utterly configurable, so you have to kind of pare it down. What's going to make the most difference?
Yeah, you got it exactly right. It's like we have that almost modularity, but it's staggered throughout. Like, the modularity of the front end of the front triangle is done in the manufacturing method, like, process. So you can't really change that on the fly, obviously. But then you do have like an initial gut feel, and that gets you in a ballpark. Then, yeah, we've been talking about like the big iteration we're going to be working on is a new rear end, but we're not in a big rush.
That's purely just to optimize. Like, we wouldn't change much.
It's not too much. It's just kind of fine tuning.
Exactly. It's like, well, instead of having a, like, with the gussets on the chainstays, instead of it being a constant wall, we could probably drop a wall thickness here, you know, just to optimize, essentially.
Sure.
So it's not needed.
And
it's just more of like...
And, you know, since you guys are doing it for fun, like I am, I'm doing it for fun because, I mean, I don't believe in selling bikes. I don't think it works out, right? And the thing is, if you're making good enough money on this with your day job, and then you can make bikes because you love it and you have fun, and especially you guys have gotten to this point, and it's like the hard part, the truly hard part's over. You got it going, and now you're fine-tuning, and now you're fixing it, and you have all the prints, and everything's laid out so you can reproduce. And it's like, now it's like you get to nerd out in any way you decide you want to work nerd out. If it takes you a month to fix this one tube, you can take that month and enjoy it. And it's just a little different.
Totally.
Yeah.
Do you do it 6 months, a year?
Yeah.
It doesn't matter.
And I encourage you to just and go deep as fuck, you know, make it great.
Cool thing, too, is we have the skeleton of the frame that so many aspects of it we're super happy with, but at the same time, we're chatting about going in multiple different directions now. Like, we're talking about, like, we have the tooling for the front end that we could use the tube sets, blank out the tool, almost lug the front end, then you've almost got another, like, skew of, like, geometry iterations of, like, travel, you know.
Yeah.
we can play with the kinematics as well, so we could even give the bike a full refresh without significant, like you said, the biggest hurdle has been, we've arrived at that next hurdle now.
Sure.
And it's we're not quite sure which way we want to go. We just want to enjoy the process.
Yeah, it's such a, you know, I mean, have you guys built bikes before that you had ridden?
I've only built one bike before.
Okay, what was it?
It's just a downhill park bike.
Just like welded steel type of?
Full billet CNC rear end with a chrome ollie front end.
Okay.
So it's like that bike was the basis for this bike. So we took a lot of those learnings that I had and applied it to this. The whole ethos was that bike was I just wanted a fun, reliable park bike that I could leave in the shed or the garage and grab and ride and not have to like worry about it. And so that's single speed and all the pivots are
a workhorse.
Yeah, it's just a workhorse essentially, right? Not a bike.
And this is certainly a Sunday best.
Yeah.
still a workhorse.
Oh yeah. Sure. It's a
workhorse with its Sunday best on.
I think also the performance gains that we've actually got from the platform are pretty crazy. Like as amateur racers, like we use that as a bit of a as a foundation to like judge where we are in the process. And we came in with an idea of, it would be better, but we weren't quite sure how much better it would be. But we can almost quantify that now from race results, and it's really cool to see how much seconds per minute we've gained just through these small like changes. It's a traction machine, moving that weight off the back. It's a different experience to ride as well. You're putting the bike in places that I wouldn't ride, like in a full enduro day, you look after your derailleur. This bike, I'm on different lines, and the rear end is just working, I don't know, just so much better than what I'm used to, that I've gained like 5 seconds a minute over 40 minutes, which is like significant.
Well, I mean, just it's fundamentals of two-wheel chassis design, any chassis design. It's like, what's the first thing anybody talks about when they talk about suspension? They talk about unsprung weight. It's like, why do they keep bringing that up first? It's like, well, because it's
Formula One,
because it's freaking important. And the thing is that you guys in this address that. Now, there's arguments about IGH and all that stuff, but the thing is, you're getting suspension gains absolutely simply by taking so much mass off the rear of the bike, and that's going to produce on a suspension level various benefits. But the geometry thing is something I would love to talk about more on the way, to look at it, stuff like that. I don't believe in reach and stack, obviously, because I don't think they have a place in the discussion, and I think there's real gains in that area by not talking about that. And I'd love to see you go that way, but I'm standing next to your bike that you guys have done. I'm in no place to talk because you did a lot of bike here, and it's just like holy shit level bike. It's great.
Like you said, we could have gone deep on all of these things, and we did. We have experience in product design and development and manufacture, but at the same time, we could have gone so deep into kinematics, so deep into geometry, so deep into the construction. But like you said, big bite. So,
it's a big bite. And so now that you've done it and you've got this stuff, what's changed in your own world? Like, you guys do what you do, but like everybody knows who you are, especially around where you are. They know you're the guys that did the machina bikes or whatever. Like, how does that affect like how you walk into a room or as an engineer or as a constructor and just be like, yeah, there's my portfolio, bro, that kind of thing. Like, does that open things up for you in different ways or make it easier for you to walk into a certain room, that kind of stuff?
For me, not really. Like, I don't really take too much into that. Like, I don't know, I just do my own thing, and if you like it, you like it. If you don't, you don't. It's up to you. I don't need an ego to stroke, and I don't need to that. Like, I'm content with my life and happy with where I'm at, so I just look at it as a cool thing I wanted to make, and I made. I don't really this is sick. I can do this. I have a skill set and a background I've come from. I've worked with some of the best things in the world and built some of the best products in the world in those fields. But it's such a hard thing to quantify.
I think you uncover new territory ahead of you anyway. You almost push your own expectations and level. You catch up to where you, like, it's the Dunning-Kruger curve, right? You figure out, I know nothing about this, as well as knowing a bit more about it. So
you also have learned how high you can fly,
yeah.
And once you get to that flight, that level of flight, now you want to fly higher.
Exactly.
Yeah, you're raising your bar continually, and it's like what's next is going to be better, whatever it is. Right.
Exactly. Yeah, and we set out to just do the best job we could with the tools we had and the time and also the budget that we had. Like, I think the bike looks really amazing.
It doesn't even look like you guys had a budget.
Well, that's what I mean, I think that's often like really misunderstood how much development cost affects the overall outcome. We're in that industry anyway. We kind of have an understanding of it, but. I think a lot of people don't. So it's cool to get appreciated at the show. I think really people can gel with you at that level.
Yeah. So what are you gonna do around in this space? Maybe in the next 6 to 8 months, or type of thing, or over. How's this? Over the upcoming winter.
Yeah.
What are you guys kind of imagining you're gonna be working on?
I've got a jet boat that I need to finish, and then I'd like to do a revision of my downhill bike, and then. Slowly work on a revision of this and maybe a lighter version, like a trail bike version of this. Is that going to happen? I don't know. We'll just see. But sure. That's what I'd like to do. Whether I do it, I don't know. But I do have to finish the boat. But I have that's an old given.
That's got to happen.
Yeah.
Right? How about yourself?
I don't know. It's like it's a dangerous thought to think that maybe like your dream is to be on. All the bikes that you want to be on in the future is like potentially developed or worked on by yourself. Like that's
Well, it could be other things. He's talking about his boat.
It's exactly.
You know, you might be a little bit more interested in some sick, like compound bow or something. I don't know.
Yeah. Absolutely. It's like open. It's definitely opened our eyes a bit more. I mean, like I said, the industry we're in is really cool. Like we're both in product design, so we're not just working on the bikes. We're just passionate about bikes.
Right.
So yeah, we could go anywhere with it. It's just I'm really loving just being under a. Being on a product and pushing a product to that level on something that we've made.
I'm jealous of both you guys. I think it's super cool. I looked at the first time I saw pictures, I was like, these guys are killing it. It's great. And that's it's cool to see. So, all right, have a good one.
Yeah, thank you very much. Yeah.